We're talking today with Alan Tracy, of course, Alan with U.S. Wheat Associates. As we think about this current marketing year that we're in, Alan, it seems like that when we started at the harvest season in the Southern Great Plains, prospects weren't that great, but boy, things have changed a great deal since then.
I don't think there's ever been a year when the estimates of our U.S. wheat exports has changed so rapidly. From just June to July, it was up over 9 million tons and now over 10. So, I mean, that's a one-third increase or more. And, of course, it reflects the situation in Russia and dryness in a few other places and a little too much water in Australia, things that everybody's, I think, pretty familiar with now. But it does catch us at a time when we happen to have the wheat, when the quality is good here and not good in some other places, Germany and Canada, for example. And it's really giving us some good opportunities to for export. And you know, we don't win all those tenders. We didn't win one with Egypt here just the other day, but we did with Iraq. And, you know, these are big volumes that we're moving out. And at pretty darn good prices.
Right. You were telling me that you were with a significant amount of the world's wheat buying power as far as representatives that were involved with a conference in South Africa. Tell me about that.
Well, actually, on Thanksgiving, we were still at the conference. It was in Cape Town, South Africa, but it was for the region of the Operative Millers, the International Association of Operative Millers, that covers all of the Middle East and Africa. Now, that covers a big importing region. You know, North Africa is big, Middle East is big, and then, of course, Nigeria is our single largest customer. So they were all there. I think, actually, we estimated of the 690 people attending that conference, we had probably 30% of the world's wheat buying in the room, which was a lot of fun for us. So we got to host U.S. Wheat, got to host a dinner for them, and I was on the program. Our Secretary Treasurer Darrell Davis was on the program, so they knew we were there.
Right. As we think about the harvest of 2010, at the time of the Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas harvest, there was concerns about protein levels, and I know we really never quite got up to the levels that we really totally wanted on the overall hard red winter wheat crop. Is that proving to be a problem this year internationally?
I don't think it's too much of a problem there. There's, of course, also a shortage of good, really good amounts of high-protein wheat in the spring wheat crop, both in this year's and in the very substantial carryover from last year. So you see it in the premiums, of course, here. Some of our customers are trimming back their purchasing specs by a 0.5% or 1%. The premiums that on the other end for the buyers are just absolutely amazing. The Taiwanese recently bought 14% at spring wheat at more than $3 a bushel over what they were paying for 13% spring wheat. I've never heard of any kind of a premium like that. Of course, up in the north, you know, the premiums on the farm are at the farm gate are about $1.20 or more. So, and I don't know quite what they are right here right now. I've been traveling, we're looking for some protein, and the world is looking for some protein. But overall, I think the hard red winter crop is doing pretty well. It's people are able to get what they need, and it's such good quality in all other respects that helps too.
Right. Going into 2011, the calendar year, what is U.S. Wheat's game plan in order to try to make sure that all these countries make sure that they take a good hard look at U.S. wheat?
There are a number of things. One, we, of course, consistently talk about the quality of our crop. But, you know, we're generally not the cheapest seller in the world, which is a good thing. I think part of that is that farmers here are able to hold their wheat. In some other countries, they really don't have that capability, or you know, a wheat board just forces them to sell to the wheat board. Sorry.
Okay. I just completely lost the original question. Okay.
For 2011, the calendar year getting ready to start.
I'm sorry.
What are some things that U.S. Wheat intends to do to make sure that we fulfill these expectations of a bigger sale of export, in other words, into the export market compared to where we were thinking about just a few months ago?
Of course. Well, we always push quality because the U.S. crop is normally not the cheapest. We might kind of be the cheapest this year because we're going to be the only ones with any significant amounts left to export by the end of this this marketing year. But we're always pushing the reliability of the U.S. supply. That was the main theme of my speech down in South Africa, to show these guys that they're better off dealing with a reliable supplier. Imagine if you were a buyer from Africa, for instance, and you bought wheat from Russia in March and you were real happy because you got it for $10 less than you could have bought hard red winter. And then once the contract was cut off by the Russian embargo and you had to go out and replace that wheat and it was costing $100 a ton more than, I mean, we're talking, you know, $3-4 more than what you thought you had bought it for, there is a value to reliability. And we pointed out to them the value of having good relationships with the United States as an exporter and with our exporters, and the fact that we can supply virtually any kind of quality that that they want. So, you know, I think it's sinking in. I also pointed out that in the future, I think world wheat trade is going to grow. It's been pretty flat for a long time. But we've done some analysis that shows that even though the world's only going to need about 40% more wheat by the year 2050, the amount that's traded is going to more than double. That means that we exporters are going to have to supply that. Now, a lot's going to come from Russia and other places, but I think there are going to be opportunities for us as well. And the buyers have to get used to some instability, some volatility in the prices. You look at how long we had a stable price period, you know, almost 30 years, and then all of a sudden we got 2008, and here again we got 2010. So I think some of them are waking up to the fact that the game has changed, and that there is value to them in establishing a long-term relationship with U.S. wheat suppliers, and knowing that they can continue to supply their customers with a consistent supply of flour means that they have to have a consistent supply of the right quality of wheat. The milling industry of the world keeps getting more sophisticated, and I think our message fits in really well with that. But it's not just a this year kind of thing. It's a very long-term process of building these markets for American wheat producers.
One last area that I'd like to talk about is the whole concept of genetically modified crops. In other words, wheat's been out of that game up to this point. There's lots of talk now about trying to get serious about moving on into that in the next few years. How do we position U.S. wheat in that regard? In other words, how much resistance is out there for that type of a product?
Yeah, that's a good question. It varies a lot. Fortunately, we do have some time. We don't expect to have genetically modified wheat in the U.S. for something in the 7 to 10 year range, perhaps. That gives us time to pave the way overseas. It's still going to be a problem. But the way that we're basically planning to get around it is that we want to be able to offer whatever kind of wheat they want to buy. And if there's somebody that just isn't going to want to buy genetically modified wheat, we're going to have to supply it to them. It's going to cost them more. We do that with soybeans going into Japan. You know, the tofu beans, they buy over 1 million tons of beans from the United States that are non-GM, and they pay a pretty penny for those. So, you know, we will make it work. It's the countries have to establish tolerances for the trace presence of GM in the non-GM shipments, but if we can get past that hurdle, I think our market is flexible enough, our producers are strong enough to do that. You see in lots of parts of the country where, I mean, it does put a job back on our elevators and so on for segregation, but you know they'll do it if the money's there. So that's what's going to drive it, is that if people are going to want non-GM in the future, they'll have to pay for it. And in the meantime, the customers that are less ticklish about that will have an advantage in that they'll be able to have less expensive wheat.
That could be one of the ways I would think we're going to be able to supply that extra wheat you talked about over the next 30, 40 years.
It certainly is one of the ways. And just looking at it from the world as a whole, you know, we're going to need that. And I think producers, of course, look forward to having those tools available to deal with various agronomic problems they have. Long term, I think what's really going to benefit or make the introduction of GM wheats work is when we have end-user traits that are meaningful, improvements in protein quality, for instance, things that really make a difference to the end-user, and that will, from then I think the resistance will fully fade.
Alan Tracy, president with U.S. Wheat. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.